this week's Yes to Life show. In the show, I speak to experts in the field of integrative medicine for cancer, or integrative oncology. And today's no exception. Dr. Stefan Gieda is a leader in the UK in the delivery and the development of mistletoe therapy. Mistletoe has a long history of extensive use, particularly in some countries, and is a worthwhile candidate for consideration as part of anyone's integrative cancer protocol. I'm speaking to Dr. Gieda over Skype at his clinic in Aberdeen. The sound over Skype isn't the best, but please hang in there for some very high quality information. Hi Stefan, great to be able to talk to you again.
Welcome Robin, good to hear you.
So the last time we met, I think, was at our event in Edinburgh, where your talk was really well received. I find that every time that we include mistletoe in one of our events, there's always great interest, so I'm really looking forward to spending some time on the subject today.
I look forward to it.
Great. So you're a medically trained doctor, a GP. What makes you such an enthusiast for what gets described regularly as being unproven medicine, mistletoe therapy?
For me, Robin, the story with mistletoe, when I encountered it, goes a long way back when I was a medical student in Germany, working on an oncology ward and meeting people who were undergoing chemo, radio, and other conventional treatment, and at the same time got mistletoe therapy. And for me, it was striking to hear people talking about their experience with mistletoe and what they gained or what they perceived as benefits on quality of life, on motivation, their energy coming back, and for many people also their outlook on their perception of better outcome and better being able to tolerate chemotherapy. This was just such an enormous moment as a young medical student to meet that one. And since then, ever since then, of these patients' stories, I kept involved with mistletoe therapy. And lately then, when I came to Aberdeen and finished my GP training, and of course in my GP practice you have own patients who have unfortunately been diagnosed with cancer and have cancer, and I used the mistletoe with my patients and saw very similar impacts, and from there people talk to each other, and by now it has grown to a much bigger practice. Yeah, the second reason, most likely why I'm enthusiastic about the treatment, is that from a conventional point of view as a GP, you prescribe a lot of remedies and a lot of medicines. And now just today, when you heard the news, it was talking about aspirin and the lots of side effects of aspirin. And what my experience is that from a purely GP point of view, that medication prescribing like aspirin and others are producing more side effects than the mistletoe therapy. So from a safety point of view, it's a very lovely remedy to have, and where you have the feeling that you see such a lot of positive impacts with very, very little side effects.
That's really important, isn't it?
That's right.
Okay, so I know you use quite a few other approaches that would be described as unconventional, but I want to focus in today on mistletoe, as it's gaining an increasing amount of attention, and it's also commonly used in other countries across Europe. Can you start by telling us some of the history of the treatment, how it was first developed, and where it's come to now?
Well, it's a very striking moment that we just have this discussion at the moment, Robin, or that interview, because in Germany and Switzerland, they just celebrated 100 year of mistletoe therapy. So it's exactly around 100 years ago when a group of doctors, gynecologists, and general practitioners were meeting together in Switzerland and discussing what options there were for a treatment like cancer. And Dr. Steiner indicated that mistletoe would be a therapy provided it's really properly pharmaceutically produced and needs to be injected, and gave them some clear indications. And from there on, we saw a development with that preparation over the last 100 years, which changed dramatically from the time it was started in the early 20s to this day and age. Now, we had a long time after the war where mistletoe was used very cautiously with subcutaneous injections, and where lots of conventional practitioners are using it safely, like I described or said beforehand. Now, in the last 15, 20 years, immune therapy has become much more to the foreground, and hospital consultants and oncologists, certainly the German hospitals and Switzerland, have explored much more intensive approach. So at the moment, as we speak, mistletoe can be used in various ways. And in this day and age, with modern techniques, mistletoe can be used for intratumor injections. So in the German hospitals, they will do endoscopy, coloscopies, or ultrasound-guided injections into tumors of the kidney or pancreas or liver. So it's much more high-tech than in the very early days, of course.
Right. And there are results to show that these developments are creating improvements in outcomes?
Yes, increasingly. I'm sure you're aware of it, that evidence is unfortunately lacking in mistletoe trials, and that has mainly to do with the practitioners involved in the mistletoe prescribing. They're very, in the early years, very reluctant to undergo really rigorous medical trials, because they didn't want to put their patients through double-blind placebo-controlled trials, having experienced firsthand on the benefits.
That reservation is because they didn't want some of the patients to get no treatment.
That's right, yeah. Yes. They find that ethically they have difficulties with that. And at that time, universities and more conventional researchers were not interested in a medication like this.
Right.
Now, this has substantially changed over the last 10 years, or last 15 years. We see more and more now more rigorous and methodologically sound, so means good design trials appearing, randomized control trials, or having an attempt to look into the effectiveness of mistletoe therapy.
Okay, so look, I'd like to go into a bit more detail now about the various ways in which mistletoe is used. If you could tell us, maybe from the patient perspective, what is involved for them in having mistletoe treatment, and these are the various different ways that it's delivered.
Okay, well, that's a big complex question. I mean, basically, I could answer that one. I could start off with saying that the mistletoe is available in form of tea, mistletoe tea, oral drops, subcutaneous injections, and then infusions, like with the chemotherapy through infusion drips, and application of mistletoe directly in the tumor or peritumor around the tumor where that is accessible.
Okay.
So these are the five possibilities of using mistletoe. Now, if we go one by one through, the first one with regards to mistletoe tea and mistletoe oral drops, that's easy available. Tea one can get over the counter and can buy over the internet. Mistletoe drops, some of them you can also get over the internet or can be easily prescribed with a doctor who know a little bit about mistletoe. And drops and tea, you can imagine, is much less complicated to apply, to learn about it. It's less, you have less to consider any side effects or any comorbidities of the patient if the patient has other problems. So that's a very easy way to go about with the mistletoe. The subcutaneous injection is more complicated. People would need to see a doctor and very directly, face to face. One needs to go through all the history and various symptoms of the patients, and depends on the prognosis, on the stage of the illness or the age of the patient. So a lot of facts to be considered in order to come to say this is the right way we want to go about with the mistletoe preparation. The biggest obstacle for patients with that type of treatment is that many of the patients find it difficult to imagine that they have to inject two or three times weekly under their skin. Mistletoe comes in a very ampule. I always tell the patients if they would be today developing type 1 diabetes and would have to inject insulin, they would have to do it 3 times or 4 times a day.
Mm-hmm.
And with methadone, you might have to do it 2 or 3 times a week. And that eases often their anxieties and concerns about that. But that's basically the big obstacle for patients is to learn how to inject safely the methadone preparation.
Okay.
With regards to the infusion treatment, the more intensive, much higher doses of methadone, that's much more complicated and needs expertise and people who know very well how to use it safely. It needs to be in a proper medical practice and it's a much bigger impact on patient. So that is not easily available and needs much more time, commitment, and more preparation on all sides.
Just to be clear, this process is like you come in on a day basis for it, though, and you're awake, you're not sedated for it. Is that correct?
That's right. I mean, the infusion treatment is very, very similar like a chemotherapy.
Right.
From the procedural level.
Okay.
The big difference, of course, is that people find it often very, very beneficial. They feel good with the infusions and don't have the nausea, vomiting, and other side effect profile you usually get or you can get with chemotherapy. So, but in principle, the infusion treatment or even the intratumor and peritumor treatment is much more hospital or clinic based and needs much more preparation.
Right.
But yes, people are awake and they are very, very independent.
Okay, so, and finally, the intratumoral.
Yes. So the intratumoral, basically, if you speak in the UK context, there are very few people who can do that one. And we, of course, we can only really use intratumor treatment where the tumors are easy available without any high tech. So we can do that one with melanomas or with lymphomas or with breast cancer, metastatic disease where the skin is involved, sarcoma. So these are tumors which are easily available through the skin,
mm-hmm.
but if the tumors are in the liver or in the guts or in the lung, then of course that's not possible to do that one in a general GP setting or outpatient clinic where there you need much more inpatient hospital setting to do that.
So these things is technically possible, but not within that setting. Does this happen on the continent, say? Do people have liver tumours injected, for example?
That's right, yes. Yeah. There's more and more development towards intratumor application. And also chemotherapy with tumours like the liver or lung, colon and so on.
Okay, so can we go a little bit now into the mechanism of action? How much is understood about the way that mistletoe acts on the immune system?
In general, we can say there's three modes which we know. The one which most people associate with mistletoe therapy is the immune modulating impact of mistletoe. What I like to describe, we can go very technically now, also I know the a pharmacologist or biochemist, immunologist, but there are pathways very clearly thought nowadays how immune therapy could work, could look like. From my point of view, what I like from a patient's perspective, as we talk a little bit at the moment, I like to bring over to the patient, it's not the concept of just stimulating the immune system, because the immune system is such a complex being in ourselves. I would rather like to use the word to re-educate the immune system, to redirect the immune response towards tumors. That is what we want to achieve. Because as you know, many people describe that they have been actually very healthy and very well, and then suddenly discovered that they have cancer. So some of the immune system works potentially very well, or maybe even too well, while other parts are much more asleep and not functioning.
Mm-hmm.
This is the area of the immune system which we want to start to getting involved, engaged properly with the tumors.
Right.
So that's the one module. mold which we know. The other one is the cytotoxic, means in high doses, mistletoe has lectins and viscotoxins. Viscotoxins are protein structures which are known in vitro, outside in the labs, which we have seen, can attack tumor cells directly and destroy them through DNA modulation, cell membrane destruction, and so on. But they're usually methods and mechanisms like chemotherapy does too. So that's the second mode, the destruction of tumor cells, the immune modulating impacts. And the third one, and that might, there might be even many more, is that in recent years, especially in Paris, immune institutes have looked at mistletoe having very similar impacts on the prostaglandin pathways, which results potentially in why, or would explain why people feel good with the mistletoe. So it has very different pathways, one more directly tumor cell orientated, others immune orientated, and then there are many other pathways which are looked at the moment, why you get an overall benefit with mistletoe to such an extent.
Well, that's very interesting. So presumably the kind of cytotoxic side of it has really only come in since it's been given in these higher doses. I mean, it very much was focused on as being an immune stimulant earlier on, wasn't it?
That's right. Yeah. Yes. And since people feel encouraged to also inject with high doses of mistletoe directly in the tumor, peritumor, and use the high doses of mistletoe, we see more such impacts with the patients on tumor shrinking, and for some people even where some people believe, and the patients certainly experience that one, where they would say that my tumors have disappeared. So that is unfortunately still not the rule. It's not the majority of patients where we see that one, but quite substantial amount of people where this is happening, and we would of course like to know much, much more about it and maybe become more precise with individual therapy in the future.
Very interesting.
There are lots of open questions still which the science community needs to answer, or needs to look into that one in order to understand it better, and keeps the practitioners like myself better handle on how to use it in more effectively in the future.
Well, that's very interesting, because you are describing it as being exactly like a chemotherapy, but in one aspect, of course, it's very unlike chemotherapy in that you haven't told me about any significant side effects.
That's right. Yeah, and that is the from treating so many patients, the really side effect profiles. What we all worry about is, because it's a biological substance, people can get allergies and can have had exposure with mistletoe before and can develop an allergy like to many other medications or milk, dairy, and other things. So if that happens, you can get really a hypersensitivity or allergic reactions with the mistletoe. That's one of the big area of concern. Therefore, the first time when it's used injecting, it should be done under clinical conditions, in the clinical context. So should there be an allergic reaction, the practitioner and the patient can be take appropriate actions.
So it has to be monitored carefully. What percentage of people encounter this kind of problem, roughly?
I think there might be, I don't know, a handful really documented anaphylactic reactions in worldwide. It is documented, but millions and millions of people are injecting mistletoe over this whole 100 years, and until this date, not one death has been reported. So, that. Fortunately, we haven't seen any really fatalities with that type of thing.
Right. So this is something you've seen in your time, or never?
Once in my lifetime I've seen it, yes.
Right. Okay, so this is what you call rare, then?
Yes, once in a lifetime, but I must admit I have at least seen two or three people with other allergic situation, like bee sting allergy, or one young child with a dairy allergy. So I have seen much more in my lifetime about other anaphylactic reactions compared with the mistletoe. But yes, it's happening, one needs to know it, and one needs to take proper care.
Of course, of course.
That's right. So the other worrying factor often, like I said, is when people don't handle the injections rightly. So if they are not following the proper procedures and keeping the needles clean and sterile or injecting wrongly. But that's more a mechanical problem which yes. can arise. And like with any injections or a cut which you can have, or with the people who have diabetes, occasionally you can get an infected area where you're injecting because of that. But that's also very rare. The most controversial one, which people often worry about, and especially oncologists worry about and patients too, is that in the literature you hear always that isotope can give you fever. And I don't know if you have come across it, Robin, but that's one of the of the concerning questions of oncologists, specifically when people are using isotope with a chemotherapy at the same time, that they always be told we don't know if the fever comes from the isotope or from the side effects of the chemo, and that's confusing. Therefore, they often get advice to stop mistletoe treatment. From our point of view, if mistletoe is rightly handled under medical supervision, mistletoe is only creating fever, and we want often to achieve that one in the early phases. So that means the first 4 weeks when you get started until you reach the big doses. Even if you want to provoke fever with mistletoe after 4 or 6 weeks into treatment, it's often impossible to do so. Mm. So it's very, very rarely that after the induction period that people do get any fevers. And if they do get a fever, it's often patients know it very well. It's when they increase substantially the dose from one moment to the next.
Right.
And it goes along with a big local reaction, like a big wasp sting or 3 or 4 wasps or bees have stung you, so it's a good 5 centimeters, 2-3 inches, a big local reaction which is really red hot and a bit itchy, and that's the dendritic cell, the immune system around under the skin being really activated, and that produces that local heat and warmth around the bee sting. Now when that happens, when you get such a strong reaction like that, because you might have substantially increased the dosage of mistletoe, or in the early introduction, the first weeks, that can then go along with a fever reaction. And the fever reaction, if that is achieved like that, Robin, it never takes longer than 24 hours. It's usually very shortly. It feels like a flu bug hits you, and for 24 hours, and then it's over and done with. So it's a very clearly context from the fever when it arises with the mistletoe injection, and patients are getting very clearly told and information given, and we're monitoring it. So it's usually not a problem. And in fact, we do like to have fever. Fever is a very positive response from the immune system. And it needs the fever in order to get its actions really up to speed. And from that point of view, we welcome actually one or two fever reactions. And we'll tell that to our patients, and patients have in generally very, very good experience with fever. Mm-hmm. So this is not a side effect. It's actually an effect we would like to see happening.
Right.
But this is the most controversial one, which we have to deal with.
So that's a good indicator for you that it's actually doing some good. Are there any other contraindications with conventional medicine? Times when, I'm sure there are times when conventional medicine would rather you didn't, but are there genuine contraindications that you should be concerned about?
I mean, general contraindication or very cautious is when the patient is not stable. So in other words, we can go through all the system. If somebody has acute angina or acute asthma situation, thyroid is not controlled properly. If they do have fever out of various other infections, reasons of infections or other reasons, if they are mentally very unwell so that they can actually not give an informed decision to want to go about it. So these are the general contraindication or cautious, where it's not an absolute contraindication, but where you need to take special consideration and how you want to do that. The good thing with the mistletoe therapy is that you have so many options how to use it, that most of the time you can find an individualized approach so that it does fit the patient, even if there are compounding factors or other illnesses which one needs to be more cautious.
Right. So you work around them.
Exactly, yes. And for example, if somebody's in the middle of chemotherapy, you wouldn't want to start mistletoe in a very intensive way and produce fever reactions, because right. if you do that one in the middle of a chemotherapy cycle, then that is problematic. So there are some really clear indications and moments when you need to adjust it accordingly. But if you do that professionally, then there shouldn't be any problem.
Okay, understood. All right, now looking at the day-to-day ways that you're working with mistletoe, I'd like to know a bit about who's coming to you for mistletoe treatment. You know, what are their personal circumstances, and where, in your estimation, do you think that mistletoe is scoring the biggest successes?
A lot of questions here in one. Start in the beginning, which patients have come to me. We see in the small practice which we have really a whole spectrum of people with various cancers, various stages. So we see people, unfortunately, still in the UK, many people come to us when they have explored all other options. So when conventional treatment has stopped and palliative care treatment has started and people are looking for other possibilities, and that's a big percentage of our patients are in this category.
Right.
However, we see also very the younger population who is much more active and looking much more querying the conventional approach, or wanting to go their own individual pathway. So we do find people who come to us before conventional treatment started, and so early on. And that's a very different patient group to work with. And we see right through all the spectrums, the same, we see people from old age of 80 years to the youngest is 5 years or 4 years. So we see also age spectrum going right through. And we see also from the tumor spectrum, see brain tumors or lung, bowel, prostate, breast. But also melanomas and sarcomas, leukemias, myelomas. So the whole spectrum of the illnesses. And that has very much to do that mistletoe is not specific to one area. If rightly handled and prescribed, if given in the right pathways and choices, one can find an individual approach to the patient to help along in their story and in their pathway. People who deal with mistletoe, they're not necessarily breast surgeons or oncologists specialized in gastroenterology or lung or melanomas and so on. It's really the whole spectrum.
Well, that's a very great feature about mistletoe then. So basically, if you've got cancer, it's something to be interested in.
If you do have cancer and you really want to explore further support, it is a possibility.
Right. Can I just pick up on one thing you mentioned there? You talked about very young people with cancer. How do you find that mistletoe is for children? Is it, notably different to giving it to adults?
Yes. With children, of course, we don't have so much experience with children because children are very, very much in hospital care, and there are very few parents who feel comfortable to look for different approaches in addition to the conventional treatment. So I would like to stress that I don't want to see mistletoe as an alternative treatment, but really as an integrative approach with the conventional treatment. Mm-hmm. So with children, of course, injection and infusion is much, much more problematic. And colleagues I know well from the German centers, they will use much more than the drop forms, which interestingly with children seem to have a good impact too. And of course, as we have maybe not introduced it properly, but we are using of course lots of other complementary preparations and possibilities around the mistletoe. So it will not be a one-off therapy with mistletoe. Specifically with children, you will try to be much more different strategies how to approach it. But yes, mistletoe will be the core of the remedies, and much more in drop forms or tea forms given.
Right. Okay. Great, thank you. So who do you think the mistletoe is working for the best?
After all these years, Robin, if I'm very, very honest, I can't really answer this question. I think people do best when the people who really are able to individualize the mistletoe, that they can use mistletoe and adjust their life and use the mistletoe really as a support structure around with lots of other things which we are doing. So who benefits most of it is, I have seen, it's very difficult to answer. I've seen people doing extremely well when they come in a situation where consultants said, sorry, you might have another 3 months to live, go and sort your life out and feel and do the things you would like to do. I've seen people walking into the practice and after 10 years they still playing golf. But I have also seen people very early on who have not engaged in conventional treatment, who took a long, long way to turn that situation around. So it's a wide spectrum, honestly, and I wouldn't be able to really say this is the diagnosis or this is the specifics which indicates that's where mistletoe is really the best. Right. There's no doubt when people come, the later people come in their pathway dealing with cancer and living with cancer, the more difficult it gets.
Right.
The earlier we can get involved, the more we feel we see more benefit. That's a generally guideline, but that would be with all conventional medicine too.
Yes.
Also with conventional oncology, you would say we would like to see early diagnosis, early intervention. The more earlier we can get involved, the better the outcomes are.
Right. Okay, now I'd like to go on and look a bit at the evidence for mistletoe cancer support. The level of evidence is very much dependent on whose ruler you're measuring with. And conventional medicine, of course, uses the RCT as their measure, the randomized controlled trial. And of course, within their scale, mistletoe treatment gets written off as no evidence. But in circles where evidence is seen less as black and white, but more a scale of a mounting evidence, I think it's true to say that there is some for mistletoe. It's been around a long time, and a lot of trials have happened.
So how I would answer that one, Robin, is that mistletoe is the most researched complementary medicine. There has been a lot of RCT, so randomized controlled trials, been done in the past. But they have been methodologically very poor. So the design was not well constructed. So there are a lot of research evidences around, but it's not good enough to be interpreted rightly.
Right.
So from one point of view, that is really right. However, over the last 5-7 years, at the moment, we see almost an explosion of research trials into mistletoe. And I'm very involved with some of the trials, have knowledge of some of the trials, which are in very early stages. Phase 3 trials in Germany, Switzerland, Sweden, and various European countries, where there's more and more very solid now evidence or solid trial designs being created and pursued. And so we are looking very much forward in the next 3, 4, 5 years.
Great.
Of looking at results, which are at the moment currently undertaken. These are trials which are designed from mainstream oncologists in mainstream hospitals and will be very objective, and hopefully the critique which has been raised over so many years with regards to there is no evidence, hopefully we can find some really good answers to engage with our conventional colleagues with regards to research evidence.
Fantastic.
In the addition, there are hundreds and hundreds of single case study publications. We have done our own ones up here. This is a very different type of evidence. And the third evidence of longitudinal studies and more quality of life studies are also in the last years conducted in a much better way. So the evidence is gathering more and more.
Right.
And hopefully in a couple of years' time, we're in a very different position.
Mm, brilliant. Yeah. I mean, I was reading one a couple of days ago, which was it was in the European Journal of Cancer from 2013, almost doubling the median survival time of 220 metastatic pancreatic cancer patients. Quite extraordinary, really. I mean, I don't know about the weight of that particular trial in terms of evidence, but a pretty stunning result for one of the worst cancers.
Yes, and that was a trial which was interrupted because the supervising authorities stopped the trial because of the significant increase in survival rate with pancreas cancer. However, even such a trial is heavily criticized in the UK and in the English-speaking context, mainly due that it was not placebo-controlled. Now, placebo-controlled trial, meaning that patients don't know, and possibly the prescriber don't know if the patient gets mistletoe or not, is a methodologically very, very difficult to bring about. That has to do because the mistletoe will give you local reactions.
Right.
And we do find it very, very difficult to find a placebo who can mimic that one, and which is still a placebo.
Right.
So the trial was criticized mainly to say possibly the people who got, the group who got mistletoe, the patients knew that they were getting something which might have been of help, and therefore it had a bigger placebo impact than the other one. Mm-hmm. So they don't know if the survival rate increase and the, and interestingly with pancreas, the other part of this trial showed that the quality of life of all of these people increased significantly at the same time, which is very unique in the modern chemotherapy
it
trials.
It is. It goes the other way usually. It goes down, doesn't it?
Indeed, yeah. And both big impacts, also they were clearly demonstrated. The critique was we don't know if that was placebo. Now, many of us would say, well, this is an extremely good placebo.
Yeah, very good placebo. Don't argue with that. Use it.
That's good result. Exactly.
Yeah. So just tell me, if it wasn't placebo-controlled, what was the grounds on which they stopped the trial early? I mean, normally they'd stop the trial because some people were not getting treated when they should be. So what was the excuse for stopping this one?
No, it was stopped because the trial showed significant improving of the group being treated, and therefore mistletoe was offered to all of the patients. It wasn't placebo controlled. You had 400 patients, 200 got mistletoe, 200 got just the conventional palliative care approach.
Right.
So it wasn't placebo controlled. It was just controlled.
I see.
And so the control group, which didn't get any treatment, they had worse surviving rate and worse quality of life, and therefore they were offered mistletoe.
I understand, right. Okay, so we're getting towards the end of the show, so I just wanted to home in on the last thing, is the exciting launch of a trial that you've been directly involved in. I know this has been a major undertaking. It's an enormous achievement even get to the starting line of a trial like this. Can you tell us about it, who's involved, and what are the aims?
Yes, I mean, we have tried in the UK context to already many, many years ago a trial with Aberdeen University, which was at the time very heavily criticized from certain pressure groups, and we couldn't follow through with that one. Since then, we are involved with researchers in Bristol. Professor Jean Fader is professor for primary care, who has shown a keen interest in the mistletoe therapy, specifically following the Cochrane review in 2008, where mistletoe was depicted as, indeed, as you said, there's very little evidence that it's doing something, but there seems to be increasing a tendency on the quality of life. And the Cochrane review concluded that more research should be undertaken in mistletoe, as so many patients are taking it. And therefore, Professor Jean Fader took it on to look into how such a trial could be conducted over here in the UK.
Okay.
And that's what we are at the moment. We are so far at this stage that we are looking at early breast cancer, meaning people who are diagnosed with breast cancer and will undergo chemotherapy. The usual therapies, conventional therapies, they will be offered and randomized into two groups. One, which go, the people who will be eligible for the trials will be randomized into a placebo group and into mistletoe group, and it will be followed up for a year and see what the outcomes are. This is, I have to stress, this is a pilot study. A pilot study to see if actually a placebo can be used effectively. So that is one, that's one outcome which we want to find out. Secondly, can we recruit people in the UK who would be open for such a trial for mistletoe? Thirdly, of course, we would look at quality of life, especially fatigue and various other quality of life factors, and the ability to see is mistletoe safe and can it be applied together with conventional chemotherapy. We'll also be looking at that. So this is a pilot study at this stage, and if it's proven that we can move forward, then of course we hope to have a much bigger trial in the UK and involving various different centres.
I see. So this is going to form the basis of a real trial, if you like. Does it carry any weight in itself? Does it add to the evidence in any way, the actual pilot?
Yes, I think the pilot will hopefully come up with answering all these questions. What the Cochrane Review has asked for makes a start. And I think if we have broken the ice in the UK with such a pilot trial, and if we can move it on to a bigger trial, on the back of this trial can come other ones, and will happen much easier. I think it's this, mistletoe is a very, as you said before, in the very controversial medicine, and if we just need to find a way to get the first trial in the UK going. In America, there's a big one, there are various ones running at the moment, and like I said, in Europe, but the UK has been very difficult here to get the pilot study up and running.
Yeah.
But therefore I'm even more happy and glad at the moment, at this stage, that we can look forward to hopefully recruit the first patients and later this year.
Mm. Well, it's certainly great news that we can actually contribute in some way, because, you know, backward Britain is so far behind on looking into integrative medicine and it's the general interest in it, not from the public, but from, you know, the powers that be. And of course, there's vast opposition to anything that looks like natural medicine in this country, which has been quite effective up to now. But I do think things are moving on at last. So very pleased to hear about your trial. One of the things you wanted to prove is that you could find people to actually do these trials. I suspect you're going to find that one an easy one. I think a lot of people are looking for other answers these days in Britain.
Yes, and I think the one thing, just Robin, if you let me bring that one in, is, as you just said, for the powers to be and difficulties of really undertaking such a trial, it would be great if we could show that not one or two trusts are sponsoring such a trial, but actually that it's really carried by a wide spectrum of the public. And therefore, we did set up a fundraising page through our website and Virgin Giving page to be able to demonstrate, hopefully, that a lot of people are actually showing or are able to show their support in such a trial, and that such a trial should be conducted in the UK and be supported. This will give another message, I think, to the powers to be, that actually there are a lot of people who would support such a trial and possibly different or additional forms of treatment which is currently not mainstream.
That's very important. So there's two ways, in fact, in which people can support this. If they people with cancer, they can show an interest in partaking in the trial, but also, as you say, any of the public can actually support the trial through your crowdfunding campaign. Do you happen to have the address of your crowdfunding page with you?
Easy to get it through the mistletoetherapy.org.uk website. Yes, and otherwise for the more medical, for the more design of the trial and so on, can go to Bristol University website. It's outlined in there.
Do you want to just quickly say about the mistletoe website what the purpose of that is?
Yeah, mistletoetherapy.org.uk website is mainly an initiative from patients' family with our support here from Cancer Wellbeing Trust. And it's a website which has various aims, and that is to provide information to the public, to potential patients, but also to health professionals, there's a section on research updates and summary of research in the website, easily to be found. There's also a big section on what mistletoe, many aspects that I talked about to you you should be able to find in the website. And there's also a lot of information with regards how you can help support the initiative, and very many patients have given a testimony about either in a video form or in writing what they have experienced here undergoing mistletoe treatment. There's also a section in all the practitioners who are or centers who are able to supply the mistletoe at this stage. It's always updated, and hope that you can get a current update when it depends where you live in the UK or Ireland, where you can find the nearest center and practitioner.
That sounds like a great resource for people, so thanks. Great. All right, it's been brilliant to talk to you today, and I think we're going to have to end it there. We've teased out a lot of the detail behind mistletoe as a cancer support therapy. I'm sure our listeners will benefit from the increased understanding they should now have of its potential. So, big thank you.
Thank you, Robin. Thank you for inviting me, and pleasure to talk to you.
The mistletoe website that Dr. Guida mentioned, mistletoetherapy.org.uk, is indeed a great resource, so do check it out. This link and others mentioned in the show are all on the Yes to Life website. Go to yestolife.org.uk and look under Media Centre and then UK Health Radio. Yes to Life, the UK charity that the show is named after, is putting on another in its series of Lifestyle Choices and Cancer seminars. This one will be in Brighton on the 15th of July, and the speakers are Dr. Andre Young-Snell from the Vision of Hope Integrative Clinic in Brighton, Dr. Britt Cordy speaking about the benefits of wheatgrass, and inspirational 4-time cancer survivor Elaine Godley. And we also have some evening talks. On the 22nd of June, there's a talk on medicinal mushrooms, and on the 29th of June, one on Chinese medicine. Lastly, on the 5th of July, we have food choices along the cancer journey. These are all in Camden, London. Check on the Yes to Life website for full details and for booking. It's been great to have you listen today. I hope you can join me again next week. Goodbye.